Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Black men are nearly 2.5 times more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts in the U.S. George Floyd is the latest of the high-profile cases, but this is something that is so familiar and routine that even an ABC sitcom, Black-ish, tapped into it.
It's important in the midst of all the public vilifying of the police department, whose members acted completely within procedure, to remember Mr. McQuillan was no angel.
What
does that mean?
I can't believe they said that.
Why would they even say that? What does that even mean?
They're talking about somebody's child. That could easily be one of these children here.
That could have been one of us.
No, yes. Sweetie, no, no. Because if you get stopped by the cops, you are going to do exactly what they say, okay?
She's right. Listen to me. If you have to talk to the cops, there's only 7 words you need to know. Yes, sir. No, sir, and thank you, sir.
Exactly. You make sure you live to fight your case in court. You hear me?
Oh, mama! Enough!
Wake up!
Let's say they listen to the cops and get in the car. Look what happened to Freddie Gray.
Yeah, and what if they make it all the way to the station?
Mm-hmm.
You remember Sandra Bland?
And let's say they do make it to trial.
Mm-hmm.
You see where that gets us? Don't you get it, Bo? The system is rigged against us.
Maybe it is, Dre. But I don't want to feel like my kids are living in a world that is so flawed that they can't have any hope.
Oh, so you want to talk about hope, Bo? Obama ran on hope. Remember when he got elected? And we felt like maybe, just maybe, we got out of that bad place and made it to a good place. That the whole country was really ready to turn the corner. You remember that amazing feeling we had during the inauguration? I was sitting right next to you. And we were so proud. And we saw him get out of that limo and walk alongside of it and wave to that crowd. Tell me you weren't terrified when you saw that. Tell me you weren't worried that someone was going to snatch that hope away from us like they always do. That is the real world, Bo. And our children need to know that that's the world that they live in.
What is the real world? What is behind the problem of policing, over-policing communities of color? Have police departments been militarized? Do many police officers have an attitude of an occupational force? Where does that come from? What role does department culture play in all this? Can that all be changed? We're joined this hour by Kevin Coakley, PhD, Director of the Institute of Urban Policy Research and Analysis, a professor of educational psychology and African and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin. Dr. Coakley, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us is Professor Kevin Robinson. He teaches at the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the Watts College of Public Service and Community Solutions at Arizona State University and a retired assistant Phoenix police chief. And Professor Robinson, it's good to have you, sir. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Our phone lines are open. We welcome your questions and comments as we talk about race and police brutality in light of what we're seeing in the news today. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @TPRSource. So, Kevin Coakley, we pulled that clip from Black-ish because you referenced it in an op-ed that you wrote for The Hill talking about this situation. Why is that clip important to you?
Well, that clip is so powerful and emotional. I remember when I first saw it, and if people who are familiar with the show Black-ish know that it is a comedy, but on occasion they take on very serious topics, and this was one of the serious topics that they chose to address. And it really perfectly illustrates, I think, the conversations that have taken place over many years in many Black families when Black parents have the talk with their children about how to really make sure that they remain alive when they interact with law enforcement. And so I find it to be an incredibly powerful and effective clip to show people when I give talks about the psychological impact of racism on Black people.
Professor Robinson, what's happening right now? How do you see things going down?
Well, I think what's happening more than anything else is we've reached that tipping point. You've probably heard that from other folks. It's just gotten to the point where people have become sick and tired of being sick and tired. And this most recent event in Minneapolis was that point where people, all people, you know, because you see quite the diversity of folks who are stepping up and speaking out. People have just gotten to the point where they're really questioning the level of force that is used by police departments against communities of color.
It's interesting how this is playing in the media, and it's worth talking about. But you do see a level of awareness from many of the protesters that America is watching, which is why so many are, they're self-regulating in trying to prevent violence and wanton destruction of property. Is that new, Kevin Robinson?
No, it's not. Because what you have, every time you have any large forms of demonstration, you have people who are going to be opportunists. And those opportunists are usually criminal-minded, and they're going to take advantage of a lot of people, police attention being paid, and they take, you know, they do the things that they do. And that's what we're seeing.
But we're focusing on how the police culture is right now, this afternoon. And Kevin Coakley, Austin has seen, and you're in Austin, has seen pretty intense confrontations there.
No, absolutely. We've had, you know, a number of cases over the years that have resulted in, you know, scrutiny regarding law enforcement. I, for example, served as a psychological expert on the case involving Breonna King, who you might recall was a teacher who was really violently sort of grabbed out of her car by a member of APD and thrown on the ground. All of this was captured on video cam, and it resulted in yet another discussion around sort of police brutality. And of course, the most recent incident involving Mike Ramos has reminded, you know, the community that this impacts not just Black folks, but it impacts, you know, folks from the Latinx community and really, really all people. So no, Austin has had a long and sordid history of these types of incidents.
All right. And so we are, but the culture of police and how what police are working with, they have a tough job, and have we given them an impossible job, and then at the same time given them too much latitude in how to do that job, and that's what leads to what we're seeing today. Professor Robinson.
I do not think it's an impossible job for law enforcement. You know, granted, they have been given a lot to do. There are social workers, there are enforcers, there are a little bit of everything these days. I don't think it's impossible. I think that in the right partnerships, you can deal with and solve so many problems. And I think that's what's important. And law enforcement has to remember that the partnerships are what are most important. That you, in order to be an effective policing organization, you don't police at communities, you police with communities.
Policing with communities and policing, not policing at communities, where there's a lot of talk about over-policing communities of color. What does that mean? What does that look like? How does that prime the community for situations like this when there are eruptions and people take to the streets, and we're actually, it's not just an eruption of emotion that's part of it as well, but they're looking for solutions. What are the solutions that people are looking for? Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What do you want to see happening with our police officers, our police force, and the policies that they have to work by? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about race and police brutality and how that has led to what we see today in the streets of America. We welcome your phone call. You can tell us what you've experienced. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Did you have the talk with your children? Have you experienced something that you felt was over-policing by police officers because of your racial identity? How did that go down? We hear the expression all the time that there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop. And police officers say that among themselves. There's no such thing as a routine police officer traffic stop. But isn't that also the same thing with you're a person of color and you get stopped by a police officer? There's no such thing as a routine traffic stop. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Your calls can be anonymous. Also, we do want to play a voicemail.
My name is Gary, and I'm in San Antonio, Texas. In regards to the protesting, I'm in total agreement. Civil protesting that does not infringe or destroy anybody else's property, you know, that's totally constitutional. But the minute that anyone destroys anyone else's property, all bets are off. They don't got no constitutional rights except a hollow point bullet to their butt. That's all there is to it. Anyway, that's the Constitution and what the Constitution says. We have property rights. I live in a historic district not far from where the riots and these rioters, looters, criminals. These are criminals. And I'll bet if you go down and if they were to get the demographics of all of those people that were there, the majority of them were there peacefully. And I'm totally in agreement with that. But the instigators that are doing this, where is this coming from? It's not from San Antonio. This is being brought in by some other organization. And that organization is criminal. They are a group of thugs, anti-constitutional. The minute that anybody's property is threatened, I say put a National Guardsman or a military man in front of each property, and anybody that even attempts to break a window or do anything to somebody else's property, shoot them. No rubber bullets. This is not playtime. Playtime is over.
That is a pretty inflammatory comment that we got from one of our listeners, Gary, on our voicemail line. You can call in and give us your live take on that, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to our guest, Kevin Coakley at the University of Texas at Austin, professor of educational psychology and African diaspora studies. Gary is actually... he's voicing what some people in America feel.
No, he is. And let me say this. As he pointed out, the majority of protesters are protesting peacefully. They're exercising their constitutional rights. We know that, unfortunately, there are some who are in the midst of them who have other nefarious plans. These are individuals who are both sort of from the right wing as well as from the left wing, as well as self-identified anarchists. The challenge is trying to figure out who is who and to sort of ferret them out from the otherwise peaceful sort of demonstrators. But I would add this for Gary and anyone else who has these same thoughts. We know that, unfortunately, sometimes peaceful demonstrations mean nothing or make no change. Colin Kaepernick tried to do this very thing when he was exercising his constitutional rights to peacefully demonstrate by kneeling on one knee, and he has not played football since. When people try to sort of speak rationally and calmly to exercise their civil rights to protest something, they get criticized and critiqued. When they do it in a more sort of violent way, they get critique. And one of the things that we do know, and this is just a truism, that when societal change takes place, that it more often than not responds to the gratuitous violence than the peaceful demonstrations. And while I am in agreement that I do not like to see any businesses destroyed, property vandalized and destroyed, I personally would not do that. I also understand what Martin Luther King said when he said rioting is the language of the unheard. So when people feel unheard and when they try to peacefully demonstrate and they aren't responded to or heard or they are ignored, this is what happens. And so it's easy to be in a place of privilege to criticize people who are oppressed from enacting what they believe to be their only recourse.
Professor Kevin Robinson, retired assistant police chief, Phoenix police chief. The police officers who are dealing with these protesters, what kind of rules do you think they're having to work by?
Well, the rules, they'll come up with rules of engagement, for lack of a better word. And that is, you know, how are we going to purport, or, you know, how are we going to act? What are we going to do? And police officers are pretty clear on most of those things. When you run into these types of protests, you allow people, and they should be allowed, to exercise their rights of free speech. And there's nothing wrong with that. And people encourage that. Law enforcement encourages that. Excuse me. It's when people act out, as Professor Coakley was saying, when they start destroying property, when they start doing things like that, the police are put in a position where they should do something. They need to enforce the laws and not allow those things to occur. That's when things have a tendency to truly turn ugly. It's a very thin, fine line that law enforcement has to walk during times of protest. But it's the character of a police department, how they react and how they respond.
Let's go to the phone lines with Renee. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Renee, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, guys? Thank you for having me. I just had a quick little, when I was like in my 18, 19 years old, when I was young, I got pulled over, you know, this and that, whatever. But the racism, well, I don't know if it's the racism or is it just because they're uniform. You know, I got pulled over, got pushed around, got, you know, and yes, I was driving erratic and I was speeding. I was feeling out. I was young, of course. And they pulled me over and the officer right away handcuffed me and throws me around, pushes me around. But then, like, maybe a few months later, I'm at a club and I see him, of course. I recognized him right away. And the person I was back then, I wanted to go up and, you know, confront him. And I kind of got next to him and started talking to him. He was a totally different person. I mean, is it the uniform that makes them think they can throw people around or what? I mean, I don't understand because it was like two different people.
All right, Renee, thank you for that call. Professor Kevin Robinson, what do you think?
Well, the unfortunate thing is there are all kinds of experiences people have with police officers. What it comes down to is how you were trained. In times of stress, all of us revert back to what is most familiar to us. So training is important in that regard. And I remember being trained with a training officer who explained to me in no uncertain terms that you treat people the way you want to be treated. You should never, ever forget that. That it's easier to talk somebody into a police car than to fight them into a police car. So it really comes down to the culture of the organization that the police officers are bought up in. I was fortunate, you know, I'm not saying the Phoenix Police Department did not have blemishes and pimples and all those types of things, because they did. They had issues. But there were enough folks who demonstrated, who led the way, who were role models as to how policing needed to be, how it needed to be accomplished. And it was in a professional manner. And not everybody does that. Therein lies our biggest problem.
Now, the issue over policing. So George Floyd is accused of passing a counterfeit $20 bill. I mean, I've done that. I didn't know it was counterfeit. I went to buy something at the Ice House, and the guy looked at it and put a little pin on it and said, this is no good. And then he just gave it back to me, and I gave him some other money, and it worked out. I didn't have to get, they didn't call the police on me. I didn't get handcuffed, and I certainly didn't get neck stomped on by, like, and get murdered. But I'm a white guy. I have privilege, and I don't have to deal with the over-policing. And so it's a different world, isn't it, Kevin Coakley?
It really is a different world. I would recommend people read this very profound article that I have pulled up here, written by Professor Connie Hassett-Walker in The Conversation. And the article is about the racist roots of American policing, from slave patrols to traffic stops. And it's really interesting to find out more about the history of American law enforcement and to sort of see where it came from. And what she talks about, and she's not the only person who's pointed this out, is that the modern day law enforcement can really be traced back to what was known as slave patrols. And this is where you had policing in the southern slaveholding states. And they had these squadrons made up of white volunteers who were basically empowered to use vigilante tactics to enforce laws related to slavery. And you see these slave patrols, you know, particularly, you know, sort of in the South, and there are striking similarities to the actions of those slave patrols to what you see going on currently. And so the over-policing of black and brown bodies is not happenstance. It is rooted in a long and sordid history in this country.
Let's go to Mike on the phones. Michael, welcome to The Source. Michael, you're on the air.
Thank you. Very excellent topic for today. My question is, do police departments, and in particular the San Antonio Police Department, have any pre-screening questionnaire, implicit association test, brain scan, or facial electromyography test to reveal unconscious racial bias in new police applicants, to screen out applicants before violent behavior toward blacks is expressed if they were hired? And if there are no tests, why not?
Michael, thank you for the call. We can't address what SAPD does. We can turn to Professor Kevin Robinson. He teaches school at the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice and a former police chief in Phoenix. What does that happen these days? Is that typical?
With all the most police departments are conducting the implicit bias test. They are at one time or another exposing their potential hires to that. They're being given in police academies, because the more we know about ourselves, the better we are to understand why and how we react to things. So it's on the radar. Some of the things that the caller mentioned, there were several other things, and I be honest with you, I really couldn't speak to those things because I'm not overly familiar with them. But police departments, it's critical on how they recruit their hiring practices. And quite honestly, that's one of the most expensive portions of the whole employment process, is all the steps that police departments take when they hire individuals.
And trying to deal with bias in the police department, you have officers who are on patrol, they see a lot of pretty horrible things, and they develop biases, and it reinforces some. And can you counter that and to tell them you're not seeing race, but you're seeing the effects of poverty and the effects of multi-generational trauma, and that this is not about race, but this is about poverty? Can that be emphasized, Professor Robinson?
It needs to be emphasized, simply because the more we know, the better off we are. And police departments have really come a long way in understanding that they need to ensure that the people they hire, the people they employ, the people they're putting out there and entrusting to interact with the communities, that they understand more about those communities. That's where all the, you know, all the different trainings really come into play. And it's important. It's better to understand the communities that you're policing, so that you can, you know, better understand the position that the people are in.
Got an email from Monique. I am heartbroken, black mother and protector of a country where I'm not protected. As a soldier, I can't fire upon anyone unless I am fired upon. I'm taught to wound, not to kill. Why is that? Police officers are being told to bring all force, no matter what and no matter what the issue. We're talking about race and police brutality this afternoon on The Source. We're taking a break, but our phone lines are open. You can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet at us at @TPRSource. And we'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about race, police brutality, and the protests that are happening in the streets of America. We're now joined by State Representative Garnett Coleman. He's from House District 157 in Houston, a Democrat. He was the author of the Sandra Bland Act that was passed during the 85th Texas legislative session in 2017. Representative Coleman, it's great to have you on The Source this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
The Sandra Bland Act, Sandra Bland was a 28-year-old African-American woman. She was found hanged in a jail cell in Waller County, Texas on July 13, 2015, 3 days after being arrested during a traffic stop. Her death was ruled a suicide but has been followed by protests and calls for reform. Your bill did bring about some reforms trying to help officers get training for de-escalation and also screening for suicide in our jail cells. But how do you think the Sandra Bland Act is doing now? Is it enough?
No, it's not enough. We unfortunately didn't get the provisions that I think must be passed. And I was listening to your previous guest, and implicit bias training is extremely important, and we can do that without a statute. As a matter of fact, we've sent an email to TCOL, the training division of the state for peace officers, asking them to implement that now. Also, we need to end what we call pretext stops or Terry stops, when by reasonable suspicion, an officer can pull a car over just because they think somebody has committed a crime, which is stop and frisk in a car. It's essentially what we have there. It's the same principle. And those are the types of things that create contact. Also, we need to update our racial profiling statute, because there are things that are happening that anybody who looked at it would say that's racial profiling. And searches of vehicles are 2-to-1 in terms of per capita of the population for black people compared to white people. This, you know, these are things that need to be acted upon, and we should add to this statute during the session. But there's some training things that we can implement now or put into rule right now, just like we did with jail suicide.
There's also the dead suspect loophole, which is a block for public information for when someone dies in police custody in Texas. There's been efforts, legislative session after session, to try and get that addressed, but it's always met by opposition from CLEAT and other law enforcement agencies and organizations. Any chance that the dead suspect loophole can finally be closed?
I think we're in a better space than we were 2 years ago, you know, in the last session and the session before that and those before that, to move forward on these other things like dead suspect loopholes, class C misdemeanor arrest, these other provisions that are extremely important provisions. And I'm heartened, but not. The unions are going to continue to oppose any of these, and they did. The reason why we couldn't get the things that we've been talking about is because of the police unions like CLEAT. And they just have to come join the party and understand that these are the types of things that are very important to create safety for them and for the officers that are there. And because officers are joining in the call for changes, and the fact that, you know, to give it to Governor Abbott, in this circumstance, he said this is appalling. And it's clearly in Minneapolis, it's murder. You know, by the way, they don't have de-escalation and the law and training in Minnesota. So I think that there are things that have worked, but these other things are imperative. On the local level, there needs to be citizens review commissions. That would help a great deal with the disciplinary issues with officers on a local level that the citizens can be involved in.
So, Representative Coleman, we will have a legislative session. I don't know how it's going to work in January with the COVID-19 situation. But so you think that these protests that we're seeing today, or whether they could have an impact on the November election with the way the legislature will shape up, but will they also result in bills passed and signed into law?
Yes. One of the advances we made after last session was the creation of the House Criminal Justice Caucus, which is a bipartisan caucus, to help pass legislation just as we're talking about. You know, the Texas Public Policy Foundation supported the kitchen sink Sandra Bland legislation. And what I mean by that, the broad and deep legislation, which we already have provisions ready to go. So I think we're in a better space than we were in 2017 after the death of Sandra Bland. So I think people are waking up, and the images are so stark and appalling that it's hard to for somebody to deny that these are tools that must be passed in order to make change. The status quo just had too many friends, and we have to deal with that and make sure that the people who are victims have the most friends in this circumstance in the legislature.
All right, Representative Garnett Coleman, state representative from House District 157, a Democrat from Houston. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Yes, sir. So let's go to Professor or Dr. Kevin Coakley, a director at the Institute of Urban Policy Research and Analysis, professor of educational psychology and African and African diaspora studies at UT Austin. Tell me what do you think needs to be happening here, as we heard from Representative Coleman, with the Sandra Bland Act and some sort of legislation?
Well, I really think that there needs to be more attention placed on police training. I know that, you know, there have been attempts to make sure that all law enforcement has some form of de-escalation training, for example, and implicit bias training. But one of the things that we know, at least anecdotally, is that the quality of the training is very uneven. The amount of time that is spent actually doing that is very uneven. It sometimes appears as though the training is engaged in sort of because it's, you know, an obligation, it's required. You don't always know if there is a will to make sure that the quality is sufficient. If I could just add that I happen to serve on the training advisory board for the Travis County Sheriff's Training Academy. And I'm also a certified de-escalation trainer. And so I have had the opportunity to work with law enforcement around issues of de-escalation, both here in Austin, but also in California. And it's interesting when I've conducted the training, and it's you can imagine how intimidating it might be, because I'm not, you know, a law enforcement officer, I'm not a, you know, peace officer, and to have someone from the outside come in to engage in any sort of training is looked at with skepticism. And I've been fortunate in that upon the conclusion of the training, I have received really positive feedback regarding what their experience has been. But I'll say that really there needs to be more emphasis on the content of the training, the quality, the amount of time that's engaged in the training, because simply mandating it is insufficient, because I have heard less than positive evaluations of the quality of the existing training.
I've heard some people say that the training is actually counterproductive, that the anti-bias training makes them hang on to their biases all the more when it's not done correctly. Professor Kevin Robinson, when we talk about de-escalation training, so there are law officers who feel, I have a gun, I have a badge, I'm a police officer, you need to respect me, and they want to put someone in a box that is not doing that. Instead, you're trying to tell them, hey, don't be so confrontational. The objective here is not to get people to submit, but to get people to do what?
more than anything else, just understand, you know, why are the police there? And the police officers have to understand that, you know, they're not necessarily always going to be welcomed in every situation. So the best way to de-escalate a situation is to understand people, understand where they are coming from. And that's about the culture of an organization. If a police department emphasizes mutual respect, if it emphasizes, you know, the idea of learning more about other cultures and ethnicities and groups, knowing why and how they do things, if that's an emphasis, that type of training, that type of knowledge goes a long way. And what it does, it helps to encourage what I think is respect that is greatly needed out there a lot of times. Because a police officer, like you said, all because you have a badge and a gun, and again, it goes back to the culture. If all because you have a badge and a gun does not mean that you have to go in there and push people around and take charge. Now, there are going to be those situations where you have to do that, but not every single situation deserves that type of an approach.
But then someone will say they're not respecting the institution of our police department, and therefore we're not enforcing the law.
I get that. And what police departments need to do is a better job of really making sure their officers understand the history of policing. You know, I think one of your guests had stated earlier, or somebody had written a book. I think Dr. Coakley had recommended people read the book that was put out by the one author about the history of law enforcement. It is true. Law enforcement has not always been on the right side of justice. They just haven't. It may have been legal, didn't mean it was right, didn't mean it was just. But law enforcement hasn't always been there. And because of institutional knowledge and a host of other things, people have held on to that, those knowledges.
We're taking a quick break. Our number is 833-877-8255. We've got some callers on the board. Daniel, Lexa, Renee, we'll get to you right after this. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about race, police brutality, and protest in the streets. We invite you to call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Dan on the phones. And Dan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Howdy. Thanks for taking my call. I'll try to keep it brief. I just find that the politicians and professors that you've had on here, the last few, really just it seems like they're just trying to evade the urgency and the feelings of these people that have been persecuted by police over the years. The last guy you're talking to said police have not always been on the side of justice or right. I find that audacious because oftentimes they haven't been. I don't think it's a racial issue. I think it's an issue of economic disparity. Ask anyone in Houston what they would think about Ms. Bland's case. And it's common knowledge she was murdered. This police state that we live in, they terrorize a vast group of individuals that'll never see justice. And that's where these protests come from. I think we also need to separate the protests from the riots.
All right, Dan, thank you for the call. Let's go to Professor Kevin Robinson, retired assistant Phoenix police chief, to respond to that. Police officers, I mean, if you get robbed, if you get broken into, if something happens to you, who do you call? You call the police. They have a job to do, and they are a part of our judicial system. We rely on them. It's how we're keeping order in our daily lives.
That's correct. And I understand what the caller is saying, and he makes a valid point that, you know, there have been too many incidences of people having not received fair and just treatment, and in some cases I recognize people have died at the hands of police officers. I understand that. I don't dismiss it. But the reality of it all is, putting that aside, the reality of the whole thing is, law enforcement is necessary in our society. It's not always going to be perfect. But we have to, and working with, you know, citizens can be the loudest voice in the room, working with their police departments, working with their police chiefs, that's how you affect change. And that's, I'm a strong proponent of people getting engaged and involved with their law enforcement agencies. If you see something you don't like, change it.
Let's go to another caller. This is Lexa. And Lexa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So the type of rhetoric that the individuals, like the caller who left that voicemail, is really upsetting. This type of thinking continues to put the value of property over the lives of people. You know, instead of saying, well, I support protesting the death of this African-American man, but property damage shouldn't happen, it should be the other way around. You know, as Dr. Coakley stated, protesting and speaking out of any kind against police brutality is always criticized, no matter what, whether it's somebody kneeling, whether it's somebody walking around blocking traffic. It's always met with, well, these people should be shot, these people should be imprisoned, these people should be, et cetera, et cetera. And the only, it doesn't change. Like, there's no real change that comes from protesting because people just quickly wash it away. It seems that the only time that any real change comes about is when people end up rioting and destroying property. That's when people care, because people seem to have this attitude that property is more important than people, despite the fact that there's insurance. You can't insure somebody, you can't bring somebody back to life, but you can repair a building.
Okay. So Dr. Kevin Coakley, if you can address that, but I really want to talk to the point of, you know, the only time real change ever comes about is when we have riots or these massive protests. And Thurgood Marshall thought that the only way you had permanent sustainable change is through the courts, is through the law.
No, well, I absolutely agree with the caller. And I will remind people that during the time that Martin Luther King was alive, he was not embraced by many white people. And while he advocated for peaceful demonstrations, he was seen as a rabble rouser. He was seen as someone who needed to be controlled. And it was only after, you know, years after he's been dead that now we have this sort of collective fondness and almost rewriting of history in terms of the way that he was actually responded to. The fact of the matter is that in this country, the history of protest has never been seen positively by those who have not been part of the protest. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what form the protest takes, whether it's peaceful, whether it's violent. All forms of protest are seen as really being disruptive to the status quo. And so for people to sort of look at what's happening now and to sort of criticize what individuals are doing is really somewhat ahistorical if you think that there is any form of protest that is fully embraced that will always sort of result in the positive change that we want. And the unfortunate, some might say, just the reality is that only when it gets your attention, and it gets your attention more often than not through these sort of violent expressions that we are seeing. Because think about it. If we weren't seeing the property damage, we weren't seeing fires being set on cars. Overcome. If that was all that we were seeing, would we be having this level of conversation that we're having right now?
I get that. But still, we have to think about there are people who demonize what's going on, people who say a protest that resorts to violence is not a legitimate protest. And they're going to say that about anything, I guess. But still, moving forward. And also, let me go to a caller, and this is Renee. He's got something to add to that. Renee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Before I ask my question, I think it's important to make note that I, too, am a young black male, and I have no intention of destroying public or private property, especially because I know it discredits our cause. But other than peaceful protesting, what more positive things can young people do to take a more active role in enacting change, such as like correcting police accountability?
And so, Renee, real quickly, tell me the change that you want.
Police accountability? That's just one example.
Okay, and that means better training, take away their immunity. Tell me about accountability.
Okay, for example, I don't even know what that's the conversation I want to have is, like, right. For example, with George Floyd, the cops all around him didn't tell each other. No one was being accountable for each other. So maybe if they were held accountable for each other, maybe we can prevent more things happening like that.
Okay. Professor Kevin Robinson, the thin blue line, the officers sticking up for each other no matter what, is that something that is it's blocking accountability?
It does. I think we would be foolish to say it does not. The unfortunate thing is it does exist. What has to happen is when those things do come to light, it needs to be eradicated. People need to understand. People in law enforcement need to understand that if they feel it's okay to stick up for someone or not to speak up, do those types of things, they need to be dealt with. And in Minneapolis, they were fired for standing by and not doing something and in participating. So departments have to have a very clear line of expectations of their employees that it's okay to do this, it's not okay to do this. And when you step over the line, there's no real equivocation that you should not be a law enforcement officer.
And Kevin Coakley, what do you see as a barrier to having real sustainable reform that's going to make living in America safer for African-American men when they come in contact with law enforcement?
Well, I'll remind people that I am the director of a policy institute, and so I absolutely believe that there has to be change in laws and policies. And I'll remind people that there are a tremendous amount of protections that exist for police officers and police departments regarding accountability from the improper use of force. And what we have to do is to really work. We have to advocate. We have to make sure that there's pressure placed on policymakers to enact laws that will no longer sort of protect those individuals who are bad actors and otherwise really sort of, well-intentioned police officers. I mean, the fact of the matter is that when you have police officers who are engaging in these sort of acts, while they might be the minority, and it's frequently pointed out that they are, you know, just a few bad apples, the reality is that you have a lot of the so-called good apples, a lot of the so-called good police officers who remain silent. And so if you have a fellow officer who you know has engaged in behavior that is unbecoming of police officers, you have to speak up. But this thin blue line is something, you know, I'm not an officer, so, you know, I can't speak to it. But from what I've heard and from what I know, it's incredibly difficult to get police officers to police themselves.
But that's what's going to that's what it takes. Without that, how are you going to have, you know, change with these institutions? Kevin Coakley, real quick.
Well, you know, I think, you know,
because I mean, let me hit pause for a second to add this really, really quickly. We thought that having more people of color in the police departments was going to be that change. That happened, and we saw no change.
No, we did. We also thought after the Michael Brown situation in Ferguson, we thought that adding body cameras would help, you know, increase accountability. Well, what has happened? In some instances, in some of these high profile cases, the police officers don't even turn on the body cameras.
Right. And then now we have this, citizens' cameras. We're seeing horrific videos circulated. The truth cannot be hid. We're seeing what's happening in America, and we're trying to come up with positive solutions. I want to thank our guest, Kevin Coakley, at the University of Texas at Austin, and Professor Kevin Robinson, former officer for Phoenix Police. This is The Source.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.